Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, and welcome to Hot D Takes. This podcast series covers HBO's House of the Dragon episode by episode with myself, an avid reader of all things ASWAP, and my friend Manny, a Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon fan who is unsullied, aka has never read the books, being your stalwart hosts. So first things first, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, TikTok, Twitter at a Geek Saga.
And I'm Manny, the aforementioned unsullied co-host. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at ManissimoOrt. Thanks for joining us for this episode, which we will cover House of the Dragon, Season 2 finale titled The Queen Who Ever Was.
As a reminder, expect spoilers from the episode we're covering, but less obvious, the only spoilers from Fire and Blood will be those already covered by the show. We'll kick off with our episode summary. Then, before we get into our hot takes, we'll be reviewing some predictions that Manny made over the past few weeks, plus a new one that Patrick submitted before watching the season finale. Additional discussion of these predictions will possibly/probably be woven into our hot takes and or our episode-specific favorites roundup at the conclusion of this discussion. But yes, we are still kind of working this new section out, so bear with us on that, please.
We also have a rating system that we will, like true Targaryens, fill in where and when we please. And that system includes rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows.
So if you've been listening this season, you know that we've only had guests on for two previous episodes. But with this being the finale, we wanted to invite both a book reader and another Unsullied fan to chat with us. So Patrick is back as our Unsullied guest, and we have a new guest, Alex, coming in from the book reader side of things. Go ahead and introduce yourself, guys.
Hi, yes, I'm Alexandra August. I am a longtime Game of Thrones podcaster, I guess, in that time, in this like time metric. I did Got Thrones starting around 2015. And while I loved that show and I loved doing it, I'm so tired. So I am enjoying myself guesting on other people's shows for House of the Dragon. Yeah, you can find me at ALX August across all platforms.
And hi, I'm Patrick, back again. I actually finally have some social media to share with you guys. I just created an Instagram today, so you can follow me at Patrick the Unfortunate on Instagram. I am Unsullied. I have not read any of the books. I'm just a mega fan of this franchise, and I'm so excited to be back with you guys. And I have a decent microphone this time.
Oh, I have definitely read the books, but I have not read the entirety of Fire and Blood, and I definitely stopped reading Fire and Blood in like the middle of the Dance of Dragons because everyone kept dying.
Well, it is history, so. Okay, well, we're super excited to have you guys with us. Just one last piece of business before we dig in. Don't forget that Geek Saga Entertainment has a Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to these Hot D Takes podcast episodes. Check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
And now it's time for the long and the short of it, our weekly episode summary.
Remember how Aemon demanded that Tywin Lannister sail off to Essos to secure an alliance with the Triarchy? Well, Tywin did as ordered, but he's definitely feeling the heat. And not just physically, as the Triarchy are demanding quite a lot in return, including possession of the Stepstones. Tywin very reluctantly agrees to this, but his trials aren't over yet. First, he has to meet their admiral, Lohar, and prove that he is worthy of sailing with... him? Tywin is taken a bit aback to find that Lohar, while being referred to as he/him, is a woman. But Tywin recovers quickly and wonders what he has to do to prove himself. Side note, a woman with wives, who is referred to by he/him pronouns, and Tywin just takes it in stride. Look, y'all, it's so easy, even a Westerosi can do it. Back to the matter at hand. It turns out that Tywin is required to best Lohar in the manner of her choosing, that being mud wrestling. Okay? But Tywin does the thing, and this means that Lohar and the fleet are signed on to help Team Green break the blockade.
Because back in Westeros, Aemon is burning down cities because he's real mad. Yeah, Sharp's point is Sharp's crispy point now, and then he returns to the Red Keep and orders that all boats, all of them, need to be searched, which will probably make it harder for the small folk to fish, but nobody really cares about them, so it's fine. And then he harasses Helena about how she needs to get in the fray, get on the stick, and mount Dreamfire and fight by his side. Thankfully, Allison stays up for her daughter, and then Helena finally stands up for herself, which of course makes even angrier. But as Helena tells him, nothing he does will change how things are going. going to play out. The situation at Dragonstone isn't much better. What with Ulf lounging around like he owns the place and Jace not taking too kindly to that. Neither is Rhaenyra for that matter, but she is at least not as pissy and pouty about it as her son is. And as for Adam and Hugh, while the former does chide Ulf a bit, the latter seems to be just kind of taking it all in, at least for the most part. Needless to say, it might be minor for now, but there does appear to be some dissension forming in the ranks.
However, while things might not be going 100% smoothly with the new Dragon Riders, Missaria is apparently still back in Rhaenyra, even in her decision to send these untested men off to Old Town and Lannisport, where they will surely end up killing a lot of innocent people. Big oof. Big oof. And then there's Daemon, who was approached by Sir Alfred, you know, the guy Rhaenyra sent to have a little chat with him. And Sir Alfred insists that to win against the Greens, they need a king. Only Alice is there to show Daemon what needs to be seen via the Heart Tree in Harrenhal's Godswood. That being the danger of the White Walkers and the vision of the future descendant Daenerys with her three dragons. But that's not all. Daemon also sees Rhaenyra on the throne, and Helaena, of all people, appears to tell him he knows his part and what he must do. So while Sir Simon Strong had sent a raven to Rhaenyra warning her of possible treachery, by the time she arrives, Daemon is ready and willing to bend the knee and take his place by her side. Like, for fuck's sakes, really. About time he came to his senses.
Anyway, it would be nice if Rhaenyra could get a good night's sleep now that at least some of her worries have been lifted. But nope. Alicent snuck out of King's Landing to pay her a visit, showing up at Dragonstone to explain that all she wants to do is run off with Helaena and her grandchild so they can live their lives in peace. Rhaenyra side-eyes Alicent's insistence that Babygon is basically useless now and she can get him to surrender, but Alicent did bring her the intel about how Aemond is leaving King's Landing unguarded soon and that Rhaenyra should swoop in and take it. But if Rhaenyra accepts Alicent's intel and offer, the chances of it being too late seem to be pretty high. After all, the dragon seeds are being deployed. Rhaena is out in the Vale, presumably about to find a dragon of her own. Alicent's youngest son, Darren, and his dragon are on their way with the Hightower troops. The Lannister forces are approaching Harrenhal, where Daemon has the Riverlords readying for battle. The Starks are finally crossing the stupid phrase, stupid bridge. Tyland and the Triarchy fleet are bearing down on Corlys and his blockade. And Larys is sneaking Babygon out of King's Landing. There is a lot for Rhaenyra to repack there, even if she takes King's Landing. And gods know it will be a long time IRL before we find out whether it's at all possible for her to do so. Which means that for now, all we can do is kick off our discussion with Maester Manny's predictions and Patrick's prophecy.
Okay, so look, I got some of it right. It's just that I was predicting a little too far is what it was. My episode 5 prediction, Aemon is going to be disobedient because he wants to be on the battlefield like a true conqueror instead of just sitting on the throne.
Yeah, let's just say he burned a whole ass town and is literally physically jerking Helaena around. So, yep.
Yep.
I love that Larys is there being like, you will die. Like, yes. He's going to kill you. Yeah. Do you see that? you will die. I like Aegon, and I know that so many people die in this, but I cannot quite remember who and how. And I know that George and the show have been pretty clear that there might be some pretty serious deviations from the source material. So I kind of thought he wasn't going to be around for much longer. And I'm kind of glad that he's at least getting to go on an adventure. And there's someone who takes him seriously.
Well, I think Larys takes him as seriously as he wants to for as long as Babygon is useful to him.
1,000%.
Yeah, exactly. My episode 6 prediction. I was just ahead of my time on this one, but I knew it was going to fucking happen. Alicent, with her power gone, may start giving information to Team Black or reach out to them in some way to try to mitigate or end the madness. And that is exactly what happened.
Yeah, a couple episodes late, but you hit it on the dang nose. You also had the one about the Starks showing up and attacking something for episode 6, which they didn't attack anything, but at least we finally got to see them crossing
they
the fucking
bridge.
They
finally showed up, exactly.
Showed up.
Awesome.
At the very end, just marching. And also, it was just the troops. Did I miss it? Did any of you see Cregan? Because I didn't see him. It was just a bunch of old men.
I did not. I saw Furs and heard that music and was like, oh, Starks.
All right. Well, last but not least, Patrick's prophecy.
So I thought that Rhaena would show up on Dragonback to save things at the last minute, whatever those things would be, because surely 2 episodes of watching her wandering around the hills is enough, right? We don't need a third one, right? She's going to actually do something now. But alas, I was not correct about my prophecy.
I think that this is one that we need to try, if we can remember, for a year and a half or 2 years to keep in our back pockets, because I feel like some part of this, for sure, her showing up on Dragonback, I think is very highly likely to come true in season three. But like Manny, you were just a little too ahead of your time.
You know, being a maester is messy business. It's messy business, you know?
Prophecies never happen exactly as they are predicted in the show. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
What if Reyna's subplot the entire series is just that, like, she keeps thinking she's going to get a dragon and she doesn't? Maybe this one will like one of the toddlers. And so they're like, yes, we do have a dragon, but like, you have to ride with this toddler. Like, you have to be his, like, designated driver.
Put a car seat on it.
Poor Reyna. Honestly, I am kind of more frustrated than I can really describe right at this particular moment in this recording that this didn't at least partially come true. But I don't want to get into that too much right now. So let's kick off our hot takes with hot take number one. Now entering the ring, the unconventional, the eccentric, the gender fluid, Admiral Lohar. I read a couple articles about this because I wanted to make sure I got the pronouns and everything right with this character. I found an article that quoted Ryan Condal where he was saying that she's a woman in a man's role as a fleet commander. This is a very patriarchal society. He called it her playing this David Bowie role her whole life. It's a bit of androgyny and sort of tends one way or the other. This is from the creator. He went on to say that, like, she's surrounded with all these like salty sea dog type of men. Their brains can't process that they're saluting a woman who is leading this massive fleet. So she presents herself as a masculine character in the classic sense, and they sort of accept it. That kind of, I think, explains why the, especially the leaders of the Triarchy, I know, Patrick, you said you thought maybe they were just trying to mess with Tylan, and you could be right about that. But after reading this thing from Ryan Condal, to me, this gives the impression that they're doing it on purpose because their little man brains can't comprehend that this woman is so important to them and their fleet. The Triarchy refers to Lohar as he, him. Tylan was a bit surprised when she walked in. As we mentioned in the summary, he really takes it in stride. And honestly, 10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows for him controlling his reaction and practically immediately agreeing to prove himself to her. I honestly almost wanted to say 10 points to House Lannister here just because I know JKR wouldn't approve. Random side note, remember the monkey at the beginning? Kind of, you follow the monkey as it wanders into the, building or tents or whatever. It was a real monkey, and apparently the actor who plays Tylan really does not like monkeys and was more worried about things involving the monkey than like anything else. There's a whole interview about it in the Houses That Dragons Built. So if you have any interest at all, or you've been watching the Houses That Dragons Built, the sort of like side series, definitely catch this one because that part at least is very funny.
Yeah, like, the mud wrestling part was very uncomfortable. Like, I couldn't even watch it because I was like, it's going in his eyes and his mouth and everything. Like, ugh.
I like that they're kind of taking Lannisters, like, we're getting a little bit deeper other than these, like, really avaricious, like, money-hungry, very kind of almost inhuman people that are so upset, that are just, like, really obsessed with being wealthy. These guys feel like they have a little bit more depth, and this was a fun episode to see him just, like, be so uncomfortable.
Yeah, probably the best part was, like, when Lohar was like, yeah, I want to like have children by you. The way she puts it at first, he's like, wait, you and me? And then she's like, my wives, I want you to impregnate them. And he's like wide-eyed. He does not know how to respond.
Oh, but he does respond. He's like, how many wives do you have? Like, he's ready to put in the work. You know, he's like, well, how many do you have? Like, how am I going to pencil this in? You know, I need a little recharge time in between, if possible.
You know? I love that bit of the writing where they just are like, he doesn't, he's not immediately sort of like what you could expect from a series like this. He's going to be like, yes, sir, whatever you want. He's kind of like, okay, how many? But he's still like,
there might need to be, I don't know if there's like a Westerosi version of Viagra, but after so many wives, you might need it.
Westerosi version of Love Island.
Oh my God, I want to see that now. Tylan Lannister with all of Lohar's wives, and she's the one that has to like kind of facilitate and like, yeah, pair them up. I also got a chuckle out of Lohar purposefully misnaming Tylan. First, she called him Tywin when she very first meets him, and it's like, hey, that's the guy from the other show.
Yeah.
And she calls him Tyman and Tyrod. And that's not how she says Tyman and Tyrod, I think, but I can't see those names and not think Tyman and Tyrod. I like the little shtick, but I'm also glad that they didn't drag it out. Like, they clipped it right where they needed to. Three misnomers. Yeah. They were funny. And then she finally said his name, which she had obviously known the whole time.
They're going to be fun to follow, I hope. I hope they have a couple of episodes where they just, like, figure out how to work together. Those ships terrified me when they got on them to, like, start sailing in, because I'm like, they're just no realies whatsoever. I want to see more conversations between these two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and just tactically, the way this changes the war, that'll be interesting to see as well, because this blockade is kind of the only thing that Team Black has had going on for them, certainly until they got all these extra dragon riders. And now apparently they're not going to have it anymore. So what's the next move?
It's going to be interesting because it's going to be a war of land and sea, and it's going to be difficult.
Knowing this universe, we'll probably see our Lord Corlys die.
Of course, I'm not attached at this point. I'm just like, you're just going to kill everybody. I mean, look, in the end, it's the past. They all die at some point. You know, I would just like some of my heroes to die of old age instead of getting killed.
But it's to the point where, like, truly anybody you like on the show becomes bittersweet because I love Eve best, but I was like, damn,
yeah,
it's not your story, and I bet you're gonna have a really good ending, but I don't see you making this very long. And then it happened.
Yeah.
I'm less attached to Corlys because he disrespected her.
This whole scene I thought was done very, very well, because again, it was like build up, you know, which this season has been all about, but it was kind of done good to where the scene would have been 10 times better if there were still 5 episodes to go. But it was cool. I was like, all right, it just seems like it's something that maybe should have happened a few episodes prior or something. But no, but I thought it was really cool. Yeah. And the mud wrestling was completely distracting because I was in the same camp of like, okay, so where did the mud come from? And it's looking kind of thick. I mean, are cows pooping in there? Like,
that's what I was wondering. Do they make a mud pile? Like, is it just like they just bring some water and they're like, she wants to mud wrestle again? Where'd you do it the last time?
Yeah. and that's a good point, because that was one of the things I thought of, like, is this just like a common event, and has this water just been seeping there for weeks and now they're like, we're just gonna rest? And I'm like, but why does nobody get malaria or get sick? I wouldn't mud wrestle in a sanitary environment, more or less. This hot take number 2, the pouting prince, ladies and gentlemen. Jace's big damn attitude with the dragon seeds, though most especially and also kind of rightfully so with Ulf. He is an asshole.
The actor who plays Jace, Harry Collett, he does have a great pouting face. It rivals / is possibly better than Jon Snow's. There's something about the shape of his face and the way he like purses his lips. Jon Snow was real emo, but this is definitely...
He was just sad. Like, I wouldn't categorize Jon Snow as pouting. Jon Snow is just like forlorn and motherless in an incredibly attractive way.
But yeah, Jace is very, very pouty, especially this.
Yeah,
I gotta give it to him a little bit. Like, this, everything he has said to her has been completely valid. And like, I loved that he called him. It's like, yo, so did you like think about my hair color when you were doing this whole thing? Did you think about like how that would... No? No, great. Okay, cool. So let's you take away more of my power now. Like, and it sucks that Ulf is like not that likable.
Yeah, dude. He's really not.
He was amusing earlier, like at first, but he's becoming very quickly just
insufferable. Yep.
I do like that Bela called Jace out for pouting. Man, I love her so much. And she's like, why are you pouting? I'm pouting, I'm reading. If you've ever just been around teenagers regularly, which I have obviously for the past few years now that I'm a stepmom to one. Yeah. Why are you pouting? I'm not pouting, I'm doing this other thing, when they're totally fucking pouting.
I do love that he stands up for his mom and he's standing up for the general decorum that someone of their position is expected to have, even though it's not working. At least someone is trying.
He's a good little actor too. Like, I would say that just in terms of like content, that the content that I get excited about rarely, even when I was a teenager, involved teenagers. I don't know why. It's just typically not stories that I find myself really engaging with. And he is playing this pretty complex set of circumstances very well. He overall is a prince who's in danger, who is doing his best to mature quickly and to be strategic about saving himself and this realm. And he's trying to be the best person that he can be. And he's way more successful than Alicent's children. But the way things are falling down and decisions made by his mom, he's not always prioritized. And also he's like in obvious danger because of what everybody knows about him. And that's completely out of his control. And all he's doing is losing power. He's just doing a great job otherwise. I'm surprised at like how much affection I have for him.
Yeah, Manny and I talked about this quite a bit. I want to say it was last week, episode 7, where it's like we totally understand why he feels the way he does and everything. But also for me, overall, his better than thou attitude, it's clearly already like you can see even Hugh Hammer, who's just kind of sitting back and watching it all. Like you can see that sort of calculation of like how much this child thinks. Not just that he thinks or even knows, I guess, that he's better, quote unquote, than them, but he's being so obnoxious. And I think some of this is that he's a teenager, because even Rhaenyra during the family, quote unquote, dinner scene is clearly annoyed, but she's very like collected and cool about it. Whereas Jace is just a lot more fiery. Ha ha ha, fiery. Targaryen, fire pun. Yeah, his overall better than thou attitude is they're side-eyeing it and it's going to cause some problems.
He kind of reminds me of sort of like when the child of a rock star vehemently is like, no, I will go to school and my genes are pressed and I rebel against nothing. I feel like he's kind of a stabilizing force, because despite like how correct I think at times Rhaenyra is and how righteous she is in this pursuit, she reminds me of the Battlestar Galactica phrase, you want to do the right thing instead of doing the smart thing sometimes. And he feels like he's sort of become this sort of grounding force a little bit, which is a lot of work for what, like a 15-year-old.
Hot take number 3, Aemon the Angi, first of his name. So Aemon is super pissed that Rhaenyra has all these new dragon riders. So he burns Sharp Point and everybody in it. He takes away the small folks' ability to easily fish for their own food, which is kind of the only food that they're getting right now. He straight up physically assaults Helaena because he wants her to fight in this war for him, to get on Dreamfire and help fight off these new dragons. But she don't wanna, because she ain't about that. She especially doesn't want to go burning anybody. And later he actually threatens to have her killed because of some spooky things that she says about his death.
We'll get more into the Helaena stuff soon, but oh my God.
Aemon is just, look, dude, like, see, they're fucking that one up too, right? Because it's like, now they're just making him like a bad guy. You know, this is what they did with Daemon that pissed me off, you know, is that Daemon was like interesting to me, to where I was like, fuck, he's actually got some dimension to him. And then he's just like, no, I'm fucking, he's out there fucking Luigi's Mansion. And he's just like, I just want to be a bad guy. And that's it. I'm going to do bad things now. And then Aemon was like, okay, it was interesting. Like he got scarred as a child, which clearly fucked him up. He had the whole like brothel thing with the lady and it was like walks away naked. I'm like, oh yeah, totally dynamic. Like there's something deep with this guy. Now he's just like, well, if I just shake up this woman a little bit, she'll get on a dragon and then we'll go burn people. And it's just like, okay.
I think it was interesting that he listened to his mother. The fact that I think you're right. And I think the show has been engaging with the fact that he has kind of made himself just a reflection of his rage from his childhood. He does feel a bit like the Ramsay Bolton of the show, which I can see what you mean in terms of them just sort of like holding up that archetype and not really doing much else with it. But I'm curious to see what will happen to Aemon next season, if he will at some point kind of have a turn there and realize that like this is not a direction he wants to go and maybe it'll be too late.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would just say that there's been a lot of times where I don't love that a character has gone from that gray area to just this kind of one note thing, but then they evidently come back. And we'll talk about that more in a later hot take here.
Alex, you said like he kind of listened to his mother, and it's like, yes, he listened to her in that moment and backed off a little bit, but then he still went and like sought Helaena out, and then he tried to play nice with her to get her to do what he wants. It's very like very narcissistic, honestly.
He's like, you know, mother doesn't understand us, you know, we're the elite.
Yeah, I think there's sort of your seeing signs that like if he feels like a sociopath and he feels like somebody who has definitely like very, very different priorities regarding human life and different sets of values in the people that he surrounds himself with. But he's also still a child. He's still younger than Aegon, who is still a child. I don't know if the show is going to lean into that, but that's what the Allison kind of thing made me think. It's like, I wonder if what will be the tangle of this mess is that Aemon maybe, because I don't think they're going to make that play date in 3 days, but like maybe Aemon will like trip himself into reason and kind of like humanity, and she will not be so easy to give him up.
I think too, it's hard, at least for us. So this is why we nicknamed Aegon Babygon, because he looks like a baby compared to Aemon, so much younger. And Aemon looks so old. Like one of our memes from season one was the Steve Buscemi where he's got the skateboard on his shoulder and he's like, hello, fellow young.
He looks 40-12. Like,
right, exactly. So it's like, hello, fellow Targs. I am totally a child. So he looks so much older that it's hard to remember that he is in fact younger than Babygon. And that does definitely color how we feel about him, because it's like a kid being, we were just talking about it with Jace. It's like, well, he's young. So yeah, like he's kind of acting like a teenager, acting out a little bit, whatever. He has a right to be upset and angry, and he might not be handling it the best, but he's a kid, remember? But with Aemon, it's like so fucking hard to remember that he's also a child. Because we have another sibling to talk about.
Hot take number four. The gentlest and most deserving, Helena Targaryen. It was Helena's week this week. So Alicent, she has to stick up for Helena at first when Aemon's manhandling her. But when he comes back around and he tries to like play all nice, Helena's like, yo, I'm 18 steps ahead. And so she basically tells him in not so many words that she can see the future. And he's not in it for very long, specifically like maybe surrounding a god's eye. She says that Aegon will be king again because he has yet to see victory. And she also mentions something about Aegon sitting on a wooden throne and then announces that Aemon will be dead by then, which was kind of funny because she was like, so this is going to happen and this is going to happen, but like, you'll be dead by then anyway. So that leads to him threatening to have her killed, because of course he does. But she just kind of like shrugs it off because it wouldn't change anything, which I really wish at that age that I had ever had the temperament to do when somebody was really awful to me. She's very cool. And she at some point appears into one of Daemon's visions up at Harrenhal. We will speak about that when we speak about Harrenhal. I wish that Helena had a better wig. Wish that everyone had a better wig. And I wish I'm not like nuts about the performance, but this was definitely an extreme. She's one of my favorite characters just because I feel like I don't really have any idea where she's going. I don't know that I want to see her on Dreamfire, but I feel like, I don't know. I this got me more interested in Helena, whereas I feel like the season kind of has just sort of been like, she's just very sad and bad things keep happening to her. And she is maybe in touch with the spirit world. This kind of like really enriched all of that.
Yeah, they finally gave her some agency.
I like her position as this person who is so disempowered, but is a queen, because it kind of just goes to show sort of like the reality of living within a royal family like the Targaryens, where you're kind of not safe. And she is sort of an example of really what that kind of stuff does to a person at a length of time.
Yeah, I loved when she was like, I liked it better when I wasn't a queen.
This was one of my favorite Helena episodes, just because the listeners of this podcast might remember me saying a million times, I'm a big old nerd for prophecies. And that's what she is. You know, that's her vibe. I don't know. I thought it was very spooky and very well done. I absolutely loved the camera work with that scene with her and Aemon out on that balcony. Just the shot over the city at nighttime was gorgeous. And I believe that Aemon is now quite shooketh, because a lot of the things that she says tend to come to fruition.
Listen, our poor bug girl, just leave her alone with her little cricket cages. All I want.
Yeah, like I'm willing to bet that Aemon wished that he just left her to her bugs also, because now he knows he's a dead man walking.
That's right. Jeez. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Well, yes, Alicent had to kind of stand up for her at first with Aemon when he was like literally physically assaulting her. Oh my God. And poor Helena's like, I don't want to burn anybody. And it's like, yes, thank you. You're like the only, at this point, you are the only sane person in this show somehow. Manny and I have certainly talked a lot about Helena and how we just wish they would stop dragging her out into danger and whatever. And then finally, Manny, we got our wish.
Finally.
She finally had a bunch of screen time that wasn't just her being seriously traumatized over and over again.
We thank you, House of the Dragon, for giving us the bare minimum.
I mean, they're usually pretty good about this stuff, but yeah.
They are. I love them.
They've really been beating on Helena this season.
Yeah, but they've really been beating on her. Dude, I just want her to just have a normal day. Can I just watch an episode where she's just playing with bugs all day, and that way I can feel a little better?
A YouTube channel where Helena is making bugs in her creepy crawler machine.
She's like doing little voiceovers, and she's got
stop motion bug movies.
She would have so much fun in like an all girls high school.
Did you guys ever watch Peeps Plays? So, or not watch. I don't never actually don't it. Know. I don't know if it was videos. There might have been a video, but there were definitely, it was sort of like a slideshow style thing. They still exist. It was, I think it was on Tumblr originally, but if you Google Peeps Plays, they did like some Shakespeare with Peeps, you know, Peeps, those disgusting Easter candies. I want Helena doing that. Like, and I know she's got live bugs, but like, I'm thinking like, just give Helena like a pile of cicada shells and let her create Peeps Plays with them. That's what I want. Okay.
She also appears in Damon's vision to give some good advice, but we'll get to that with hot take number 5. Damon comes to his senses.
Oh my God. It's about fucking time.
This was kind of like a weird one because I didn't like the transition of it because we spent too much time with him being weird. And then all of a sudden he was like, oh, yeah, no. Yeah, okay, sorry. I'm okay now. I just had to have my freak out at Taco Bell, but I'm good to go. Getting right back onto it, you know? He doesn't seem to immediately want to turn down Sir Alfred, but thank God for Alice. And Jesus Christ, that vision.
Yeah.
Dude, that vision was fucking cool.
We got to see, I'm guessing, the guy in the tree. Obviously, that's Brendan Rivers, the young version of Brendan Rivers, who appears in Game of Thrones with Bran up in his cave. That was him, right? Like, nobody, come on. It's a very pale Targaryen looking dude, sitting in a tree. And then you like go into his face, yeah. And then it comes out as a crow. It was Brendan Rivers giving Damon this vision.
Would it maybe be referring to Aegon? Because we've got something on his face, and I felt like it looked like he was like super, super white. And they're like, he's going to sit on a throne of wood, and Laerys is taking maybe. Him someplace. Like, is he going to have a sort of brand mirror journey a little bit?
Oh God, I hope not.
But if that's true, I'm sorry if I spoiled it.
It is not something that is in the books, no. So you're good there. You're not spoiling anything from Fire and Blood, at least.
I mean, Brendan, I also own this prediction.
TM that prediction, Alex.
Is it at all possible that this was a three-eyed raven that existed before Brendan Rivers?
Because isn't Brendan Rivers, isn't he like the hand of the king during like Duncan Egg?
Well, yes, something? But we also learned that he can, I am putting this extremely like, this is not how it actually works in the grand scheme of things, but he can travel back in time.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Through visions and everything. So like, remember how he took over young Hodor? Mm-hmm. And I know that's a show thing, but yeah, he can quote unquote travel back in time. So yeah. And listen, like if anybody's listening to this and you believe that I am entirely wrong, I am always open to hearing thoughts and contradicting opinions. But to me, it felt like we were seeing Brendan Rivers very soon after he sits his weirwood, you know, sits in his weirwood up in, you know, up above the wall, showing Damon this vision of first the White Walkers, and then you see the battlefield with all these dead dragons, and somebody's, Damon, we assume, is walking because you see the boot stepping through mud, and then it flips upside down and he's falling into water. I had to watch it. I watched it 3 times to make sure it was Damon they were showing, because I was like, wait a minute, was that Aemon? Because after what Helena has said about Aemon in the God's Eye, but no, it's Damon's face. But also we've seen Damon see himself as Aemon. So
right, that's true.
It's a lot of messy, but also a lot of really fucking cool.
Even like the green seers are like, I don't fucking know. They all have the same color hair.
And the same like 10 names.
yeah.
This was my absolute favorite part of the episode, though. I mean, and quite possibly my favorite moment of the whole season. I kind of treat it all as one scene. This vision was blended into Helena's discussion with Aemon. And so we kind of saw two different prophecies, two different visions going on there. But when we were going through this weirwood trip with Damon, my hand was on my mouth. Tears were coming into my eyes. I was just so overwhelmed. I did not expect to see White Walkers and Daenerys, our queen, our mother of dragons. I did not expect to see her again. It was so beautifully done. And then Helena popping up within his vision makes me wonder if Damon is tapping into the same wavelength that Helena is on, through which she sees these visions, and if she really is like seeing him in that moment, or if this is just some weird thing that's kind of being put in his head, or if that really is Helena and they actually do see each other in this mystical realm, whatever it is. I don't know. I thought it was really, really cool.
I don't think that Helena ever goes to the Godswood at the Red Keep, but all I can think is like Helena and Damon are both surfing that weirwood.net. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I kind of like what Alice did when she just like brought him over. She's like, yo, it's time, and like brings him over to like hook him up to the Matrix. I was like, I do not know that I would want to give you like full network permissions, dude. Like there's a lot of information there.
Manny is the IT specialist amongst us. Would you give Damon full network permissions?
No. No, no. He would have permission to the guest network that is the neighbors, not mine. You know? Like, no, I don't want his ass. I don't, who knows what he's going to look up.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild to see the effect this has on him, though. Like, it seems to really, again, he is also shooketh, and it seems to ground him quite a bit. And, you know, this is when we finally see him bend the knee in front of the rightful queen, as he should have the whole time.
The bar for men is so low. Like, that was, like, I kept thinking, like, during this episode, it's just, like, he is, and I've enjoyed Damon's whole storyline. And just because I like Matt Smith, I like the character of Damon. He's just very messy and chaotic and like very low, like on the emotional IQ situation, because I feel like what happens when you're raised with a tremendous amount of privilege and zero consequences and a dragon and all sorts of feelings. And I also think that HBO, I kind of wonder if one of the reasons they just like sent him on like a side quest for an entire season is because like they don't quite know how to really approach his relationship with his niece. And how they're also very romantically inclined. Like, I was surprised that they landed that bird as well as they did in season one. But part of me wonders if kind of scooting him away to do his own thing for the entire season was like so they could not have to deal with the domesticity of incest in that way. I don't know.
I don't know, man. Kings and queens have been brotherly marrying each other for like ever. I'm not even mad that they took him over there. Is that they spent so much time over there. And I really appreciated Damon because Damon, you know, the first episode, I was like, oh, this guy's a problem. He's going to be a piece of crap. And then when he winds up killing the crab feeder, I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, he just walked right in there and just did it. That's fucking awesome. And the way they were just kind of building his character was great. And then now it was just like, I don't know, they just sent him off to go do something. You know, I would have liked to have seen more interaction between him and like, you know, Rhaenyra and like everything that's going on. Like I said, not that I had a problem with him going there, but it was the amount of time that he...
Like amount of times this season where somebody was like, yo, so we're just like fully down a huge strategic element because someone is pouting up on Harrenhal and like refuses to answer his phone. This is so shitty of you. You're married and you're just, dude, now is not the time. Like, figure it out. Yeah. And then, like, she comes back and she's like, yo, are you in? And he's like, I'm in. Yeah, I'm sorry. And, like, that's it. And of course, he does his job, but it was just.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, Tara, from a book reader's perspective, like how kind of all this went down in the book. Was there this will he or won't he help Rhaenyra in the book? And was there a moment that kind of made him decide to stick with her?
Damon is definitely painted, he's less in gray tones in the book, but there was absolutely this question after he kind of hied off to Harrenhal whether he was raising troops for himself or actually going to back Rhaenyra. And I think it was less obvious until kind of a battle happened that he was actually going to side with Rhaenyra. So like, I'm with Manny on this. It's like, I felt like they did some really good character building with him in season one, and then they took some of that away from him in this season, just in terms of how he was acting, like where he was just kind of like plopsing around Harrenhal, like making everybody call him king and shit. I mean, and like Manny said, when Sir Alfred shows up and he's like, oh, we need a king, guys. You know, and Damon does say like, oh, what I didn't expect you to be a fucking turncloak, but he doesn't seem disinterested.
Is he going to tell Rhaenyra that this guy or girl, that
I'm assuming that Damon told Rhaenyra about Sir Alfred. Maybe he didn't, but the end all be all is that he stuck his hand in the weirwood sap and saw the whole like threat of the White Walkers coming at some point in the future and understood that whether it was Rhaenyra or someone later, cough, cough, Daenerys, which didn't also come true, but whatever, that it's Rhaenyra on the throne that is what matters now. Well, I think they spent, and Manny, you and I have talked about this like one-on-one quite a bit. Like, well, I agree that they were actually, you think they spent a little bit too much time with Damon and Harrenhal. And I do agree with that. Like, as much as we loved seeing like Millie Alcock come back, seeing our king again more than once, I think that Damon seeing this like inevitable threat and knowing the vision showed him that Rhaenyra is the one, Rhaenyra being on the throne is what's going to prevent it from being worse than it could be or whatever.
Right. Like he saw that there needed to be a united front among the living, basically, to fight.
And apparently even Helena agrees with him. So then Rhaenyra shows up. And of course, she's been told that questionable shit is afoot. But then Sir Simon's like, wait, maybe not. And I'm just going to throw this in here. The scene of her flying on Dragonback, like not the whole thing, but when it was showing her like kind of from this weird side angle and you can only see like part of her and like Harrenhal, it looked really shitty. And it looked really shitty when Cyrax landed at Harrenhal, like visual effects wise. Sorry, not sorry.
I've been a little frustrated with Harrenhal, and maybe I don't know if I'll have the time to go back and rewatch these episodes, but I feel like I still, either because it was dark or because they just wanted to convey scale without a huge amount of realism or literacy, just because of whatever. But I was like, we're going to spend a lot of time at Harrenhal, and I really want to understand the scale of this place. And I don't feel like I do. I don't know if that's me, if that's a me thing or if that's a show thing.
I think the shots of Rhaenyra coming in to Harrenhal, we got a lot more of, I guess, a wider view of the castle. I think that helped kind of with what you're saying, visualizing the scale of the place. Because yeah, before that, it was a little fuzzy.
I wish they had a blueprint or something, or if somebody had, I don't know if anybody's drawn like, this is what Harrenhal looked like for 5 minutes before.
I will say, like, after Daemon bends the knee, and I do think this one scene does show the scale, because there are like tents inside Harrenhal.
Yeah.
And like hundreds, if not thousands of people inside Harrenhal, and fucking Cyrax is like perched up above them.
That's a good point.
Daemon gives his little speech where he's like, yeah, we're going to kill them all, blah, blah. And it felt very like, we're off to win the championship. Like the speech appears from a fucking
high school football for sure.
Remember the Titans!
Exactly. I feel like Manny and I do, we've done another series for a long while on this podcast that's called 90s and Naughties Cringe Factor. We haven't covered any like sports movies specific yet. Varsity Blues is definitely on the list, but I've been like cringing about having to talk about that one, honestly, because it's going to be a real bad one. I mean, I don't know, like Manny, with all the high school movies we've watched, like, did you also get that immediate? Like,
oh yeah, I got it. I was like, wow, dude, the two podcasts are going to become one. I love it.
Which is also a 90s Spice Girls song, To Become One.
For hot take number 6, Alicent sneaks into Dragonstone. I really, really, really enjoy scenes between Rhaenyra and Alicent, and because I love their relationship. I like that it's being used to drive this series, and I like that they've figured out ways to give us scenes together amidst this war that feel pretty believable. I think I tweeted something about Alicent's accountability and how she just does that. Like, she realizes the mistakes she's made. She realizes that her children are either incapable of leading or outright destructive, and she realizes that, like, Rhaenyra is what the realm needs, and she shouldn't have done. Also, like, once she learns the information that Rhaenyra is like, yo, he was talking about a prophecy, you were wrong. Once she hears that, she's just a reasonable person. Like, she gets information and she makes conclusions with it, and she goes to Rhaenyra and she's like, listen, I think I can make this bloodless. I think you were right this whole time. Let's fix this so my sons cannot be in power and you can be, and I can take Helaena and our gentle children and just disappear. And I don't know, very in love with this for her. And also, I kind of liked when they went back and forth about to Kristen. So,
well, I think that Rhaenyra does not know that's who it is, but
no, she doesn't, but I did.
Yeah, right. We all did. So the whole, like, I do have desires. Yes, but you made your virtue a banner. Ha ha ha.
Yep. Yep. And good job, Alicent. We've all been there when we have been the asshole. Alicent was the asshole. And she owned up to it. She owned it, for my Bravo fans out there. I love her. I can see her outfits continue to be my favorite part of this series because they are made for me and my coloring as well. And I just, I like that this is her big swing. I like that this is her hero move. I don't think that they're going to make their play date. I do not think that next season, those 3 days, that Rhaenyra is going to knock on the door of King's Landing and Alicent's going to be like, hey, I don't think that will happen. I don't know how it's not going to happen. I'm sure it'll be upsetting.
But, come on in, girl. Let's party.
I missed you so much. Can we just like hold hands again? Let's go to a tournament.
When Alicent was like, come with me, I was just like, oh my God, how many times is poor Rhaenyra going to have some asshole just be like, come with me, like off to do nothing? And Rhaenyra's like, no, I have a job.
I know, Rhaenyra did not, like, for a second, I felt bad for Alicent. Like, that took a lot for her to ask. Rhaenyra was like, yeah, no.
It's like, I'm fucking good. Sir Cole of House Law over here. Come, like, raise oranges with me and Bravos or whatever the fuck he said in season.
But he's annoying. Okay. Like, at least Alicent, she would have a good time with. I would not want to. Oh, man. Kristen is definitely a friends with benefits kind of guy.
Oh, I don't even know if he's that.
Or just like benefits.
No, he's the guy who is stuck in my trunk kind of guy. Is what it is, you know, just completely intolerable, where it's gonna be like, you know what, dude, now you're going for a ride in the back.
Yep.
And go dump him somewhere.
I think my problem with this is her, I think I've been mistaken. It's like, yeah, duh. And kind of like too little too late, as we mentioned, or as I mentioned at the end of the summary. I also loved, and Manny, I know you'll back me on this because we're both just fucking in love with Emma Darcy, but I loved Rhaenyra's like stance and the look on her face. And I'm saying her because I'm talking about Rhaenyra right now, but like, she's just like, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. She's like, right now. See, you were all like, no, we can't stop when you had the upper hand. And now that I have the upper hand, well, now there's a fucking problem, isn't there? No. Go back home.
I think that like they do both want the same thing. I like the fact that Rhaenyra is getting this moment where she can be like, uh-huh, yeah, well, fuck you. But I also think that she is, I feel like, too much victory in somebody in a position of her power, eventually that's going to start to look bad. So what I kind of hope to see, and I like that we saw it here, that she is willing to trust that, yeah, Allison is coming back hat in hand. But sometimes when people come back hat in hand, it's best to take that as an opportunity that it is to stop a conflict that's going to cost a lot of people. If you don't, a lot of people have nothing to do with it, but like it is like it was I think why it was such a delicious scene. It was very, it was so full up of like Rhaenyra's righteous, like, oh, did you want something now to like,
you have a lover after you chided me, not even chided, after you talked mad shit about me and got me in super big trouble for having a lover. Fuck you. Like, oh, you called me a slut when I slept with that one dude in high school, and now here you are with your own like miscarriage geniality.
Yes,
there was that, but then she, you know, things get serious, and this was a really beautifully done scene. I loved it for a number of reasons. One, earlier in the season when these two met in King's Landing, my thought at that time was, well, I used to think that Alicent was this gray area character. But then when she was finally told and finally realized the mistake that she made, she was like, no, there was no mistake. And she gets up and walks away. And at that moment, she fully moved into the, okay, fuck you, you're not a gray area anymore, I don't like you anymore. But here she is moving back into that gray area. And that's what I love about this franchise, is that most of these characters, there's very few black and white. It's very much in a gray area. I also love the juxtaposition between how powerful women in this world handle big momentous decisions versus how the powerful men would do it. If this were two men, their swords would be drawn, they'd be stabbing each other. But here these women are tearfully looking at each other, having this conversation with the emotions in play. And after all of this has gone down, it's hard to remember sometimes that these two characters started out as just these two little girls that were just friends and like laying in each other's laps.
Best friends.
At least I felt that kind of come back a little bit. I kind of got that they missed those times as well. And I also think it's very interesting that we've seen kind of a reversal of roles here. It used to be that Alicent was the one that felt trapped in her duty or her sense of duty, whereas Rhaenyra was the more kind of free spirited, do whatever the hell she wanted to do. And now it's kind of reversed. Alicent is trying to move into this, I'm leaving all of this behind, do you want to come with me? And Rhaenyra is like, no, now I feel trapped by this sense of duty. I feel obligated to stay and be queen. So there were so many layers here. And when Rhaenyra tells her, you can't get everything you want with this situation, I'm going to kill Aegon, but can you accept that? And Rhaenyra has tears in her eyes as she's asking this question, because she doesn't want to do this to someone that she loves, or at least used to love. And then when Alicent, she nods after a few moments of torture. And I don't know, I thought it was really beautifully done. I am excited to see what happens with this playdate, like you said. I mean, we did see in Daemon's vision that Rhaenyra is sitting on the throne. So does that come to pass? Does she actually go to King's Landing and get the Iron Throne, at least for a second? Helaena then, on the other hand, says Aegon will come back and he will reclaim the throne. So even if Rhaenyra gets it, I don't know. Again, all the good people lose in this universe, so I don't have high hopes for Rhaenyra sitting on the throne for very long.
I just want to point out one quick thing. This is going back a little bit, but when Alicent is like, I too have desires, and Rhaenyra says, yes, but you alone made virtue your banner. Alicent literally responds with, yeah, but you didn't have any virtue, bitch. Like, she doesn't say it that way, but like, that's basically what she says. And yeah. It's like, girl, can you just, you are not in a position, like you are literally in Rhaenyra's home. You are not in a position to be shit talking her right now. Yeah.
I loved that so much just because like on the one hand, I definitely know how to like lie down and play dead and be like, I am not a threat to you. I'm sorry. And I know how to use my humility to end a conflict because I don't know, which is valuable, but you just can't do it all the time. And I kind of like that Alicent was like, yeah, yeah, everybody's done a lot of things. Okay, that's not why we're here. And I just kind of like that she just shut it down with being like, yeah, you want to be petty? We can be petty for 5 minutes because it's not going to go very far.
Yeah, I think that was part of the kind of return to their teenage girlhood.
I liked how what you mentioned about them having these different, that sort of reversal of the sort of duty and freedom. And I like that it's sort of, you see them, they're not twins, they're not alike. They don't really want the same things because I don't know that Rhaenyra felt like she was glad to say no. I think she might have like for a brief moment, but it didn't seem like she was wistfully wanting that at all. It was more like, oh, honey, no, I'm the queen, like the real one. So like, no, but you're so sweet. See you in 3 days. Like, and I know it wasn't that petty. It wasn't that like, it wasn't that elitist. I think that what you said about like female conflict resolution in this way, it's like, no, they didn't fight each other. They found a way to sort of play mental chicken and be like, all right, who's going to give up a position first? It seemed like they were both committed to not leaving that room until they got what was in their hands. Cause they recognized they had the power to stop this. And it was cool to watch.
I will say that last week, one of our hot takes, and Manny, you can compare this for me, was Wet Hot American Summer starring Alicent Hightower. Oh my God, yeah, it is Wet Hot American Summer starring only Alicent Hightower, possibly like co-starring Helena Targaryen, but there's no Rhaenyra in that Wet Hot American Summer mix. Sorry, Alicent.
Nope. Starred, directed, written by Alicent Hightower. That's it.
Produced by
Alicent Hightower. That's it.
Released on Amazon by Alicent Hightower.
Exactly. By Alicent Hightower Productions.
One last thing before I move on to the next hot take. And I don't want to discuss this because I do not want anything to be spoiled. Rhaenyra's line to Alicent, history will paint you for a villain. I'm just going to say that was a little bit meta. And then I'm going to move on to hot take number 7. It's a montage. A big old trailer for season 3 montage. Okay, listen. I would have given this montage 10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows if it weren't for the fact that it was the ending of the season finale in which nothing really actually happened after a season that was at least 85% build up for the next season and knowing that we'll surely be waiting 2 years for more. So because of all that, it's demoted to 5.5 Targ eyebrows, I think. As I mentioned very briefly earlier when we were talking about Patrick's prophecy, come on, they could have at least given us Rhaena actually gaining that dragon, assuming that's the route they're taking with her. I will say it was nice in this montage to get the tease of Daeron on his dragon with the Hightower troops. But I'm going to turn this over to Manny because he messaged me something last night and I was like, you need to put this, like, you need to say this word for word in the podcast.
This is what I wrote because I had to sit there and like Tara, I had to kind of just simmer on it for a bit and be like, let me just think about what I just saw and how it makes me feel towards the rest of the season. And I said, I certainly didn't hate it, but I felt like I've been getting breadcrumbs for the whole season. And your boy is fucking hungry. Okay, dude. Every episode, it's like I was waiting for like the big thing to happen. And I didn't think that they had, I mean, I kind of suspected after the first 2 episodes that this was going to happen, but they are going to stretch Armstrong the shit out of this material and try to make it span over 7 seasons. And I'm like, if you do that, this is the moment where I'm like, guys, this is what's going to make or break you. Because the one thing that I loved so much about the first season, it's that it didn't waste any of my time. Nothing was handed to me. They let my brain finish it. You know, that's why I liked one of my favorite things in the show is when Daemon kills a crab feeder and they didn't show anything about it. He just went in and went out because the sword fight wasn't the point. The point was that Daemon killed the crab feeder. Or the fact that they didn't have to show little kids fighting in the fighting thing, right? Because your brain is going to fill that in. They weren't wasting my time. And I loved that. And then in this one, I was like, they're not, clearly not going to do it. If season three, see this show to me, I already love way more than the original Game of Thrones show. Like way, way more. Season three to me is going to be the make or break moment for the show for me. Because if they do the same thing that they did this season and they stretch it and they stretch it and I have to wait 2 more years, bro, I'm 47. When is the show going to end? When I'm 60? 65, you know, like I'm not doing that, you know, like, no.
There's a lot of shit, battles and stuff from the book that I really thought we would get at least one at the end of the season, and we didn't. And the fact that there were none, my only concern is what the fuck is the budget for season three? Because yep. I can't imagine they're going to have the budget to cover, particularly if they're doing 8 or fewer episodes. I can't imagine they're going to have the budget to cover everything they need to, because there was the announcement made that there's only going to be 4 seasons, which I'm totally fine with. This is a story that has a conclusion. It has a literal conclusion in Fire and Blood. And they've already been like expanding on the very minimal story that is told in Fire and Blood with this show, which I have loved for the most part. But yeah, I don't understand how they're possibly going to have the budget to do all of the things they probably should do in season three without, like, unless they do a very, like, a 6-episode season, which, my God, have we not learned anything from Game of Thrones, y'all? Like, have we not?
Hopefully they saved some money from not doing a whole lot this season.
Hopefully.
That they can combine.
They did not do nothing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of expensive dragons, but still.
I definitely loved the pace of this. Like, I started enjoying this show about 7 episodes ago. But I also kind of, like, to your point, Manny, have also felt like, yeah, now I feel like there's things filler. Like, Rhaena's been wandering around in the Vale for, like, a long time. And Daemon, like, had a bunch of visions. And that's fine. And it was interesting. And I liked Ellis Rivers. But also that felt like, okay, it felt like beholden to someone else's timeline. And I felt like a lot happened. Like, we got a lot of really good character growth. But I also found myself wondering, I'm like, because before I heard about 4 seasons, I was like, how are you guys just going to try and drag this out? Because this war is not that long. And like, I don't know how, and it doesn't seem like, I didn't feel like we had I don't have a sense of the structure of the show. You kind of did with Game of Thrones in the sense you're like, okay, yeah, I believe that like the winter is coming bit is going to be in season 8. And it was. Whereas this, it's like, I don't know how to receive each season because I don't know when a climax is coming. I don't know if you're going to spend an entire season on a war or if it's going to be like, who knows, which is again, like, it's not like they're going to ask me for permission, but anticipation is part of the enjoyment. And I don't really know what's coming. And they didn't build in a lot of trust for me in terms of pacing. I mean, they did, but like, I worry that it's going to feel uneven a little bit, maybe.
Yes.
They only do 8 episodes like every 2 years. I am very appreciative, more than I thought I would be, of the intensity of like life with dragons that we get every week. But I just don't think we have the appetite for that. And I think like that holds up, or at least I wish it did, a Knight of Seven Kingdoms, because that should come out like right after. I don't know.
First season of Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is supposed to come out next year. So that's great and all. But like, the other part about that is like, there's some stuff that happens in Knight of the Seven Kingdoms that if you haven't read the books is going to spoil House of the Dragon shit.
It feels
if
a little
not
bit like
very careful.
I don't know that I can expect of like modern entertainment to follow what I thought worked, but I don't think that it's been great that The Walking Dead has done a bunch of shows that are kind of overlapping. If there's just content that needs to take a break, and it feels like, I don't know that I want 2 concurrent Game of Thrones shows so much as it would be better to have like a really heavy like Dance of the Dragon show and then full zigzag to like, all right, we kind of showed you, we've spent the last couple of years showing you how fun dragons are, but also how like they are as well. And now here's a series that takes place largely without the influence of dragons and supernatural. And so I guess, I don't know that people are going to want those things at the same time.
Yeah, I kind of echo y'all's thoughts as well. I had it in my head that this was going to be the shit hits the fan season. And so it just did not turn out at all how I expected it to be. Clearly, that's going to be next season. But I don't mind a little bit of drawing things out, character development, world building, all that good stuff. But it did, I like how you put it, Alex. It kind of felt like it was beholden to somebody else's timeline when we're having the same exact conversations over and over and over. Like, how many times do we need to hear characters talk about, we need Daemon, somebody go get Daemon? How many times do we need to hear Rhaenyra say, man, I'm so sick of being in this castle, I wish I could go do stuff? You know, like, it just was very repetitive and kind of drawn out. So I was very surprised and a little disappointed that we didn't get at least one more major battle in this finale.
Or if not a battle, at the very fucking least, show us Rhaena getting that dragon.
Sure.
That was like the bare minimum I expected. Yeah. And when it didn't happen, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? I know where they're going with Rhaena and the dragon, and I'm not going to say anything more about that because I feel like I could possibly be spoiling something if I gave more information, and I don't want to do that. But for Christ's sake, like, give us one more thing. Like, one more thing. The whole reason this hot take was like, it's a montage, a trailer for season 3 montage. It's because that's literally all it was. It was like marching, marching, marching. The dragon sees dressing up. Rhaena's still out in the veil, finally like coming face to face with that dragon, but nothing happens. I will say I like that we got to see Allison's youngest son, Darren. Well, we not see him specifically, but that's Darren on his dragon on their way, you know, with the Hightower troops. And though the Lannisters are marching on Harrenhal, and Daemon has the Riverlords readying for battle, and the Starks are crossing the stupid phrase fucking bridge, and Tyland and the Triarchy fleet are bearing down on Corlys and his body. Like, there's a lot of great things in that montage, but like, this is the shit that should have been a trailer for season 3. They should have ended, I don't know. I will say that, like, we usually do a whole season recap episode, which I am hoping to get that recorded before Dragon Con this year, fingers crossed. But there's a lot of nothing's happening, nothing's happening, nothing's happening. Allison's walking away in her cloak. Rhaenyra's gazing out her window. Allison's walking away in her cloak again. Rhaenyra is gazing out her window. Like, I will watch
Allison walk in a green cloak of various like textures and shades and styles, like, all day long. But yeah, it felt like an episode of Yellowstone, which is not necessarily like not a terrible thing, but it was just a lot of like, oh, we have time to fill, so let's do it, and really good actors. But before I forgot, though, do we think Allison captured Otto? Because for a minute, as I was watching it, given the way they transitioned and how she looked like real sad, it was a very Sansa look that she felt really satisfied. I wondered if she hadn't been the one to set him off course, or if that's that implied. And that would be really cool if it happened. But I don't think it confirmed that.
Listen, I have no idea, because I didn't even realize that was Otto, because all old white men look alike. Apparently, I thought that was Sir Alfred.
I mean, they want the same thing, which is not a woman on the throne.
Yeah, I don't know. And some of this we'll definitely get into more in our wrap-up episode, which we do. But I will say this. I loved the music of the montage, right?
Yeah,
I loved the music. I loved seeing all of this like build-up. I just don't think, don't end your season with a trailer for the next season, right, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. I mean, there's cliffhangers and then there's like straight up trailers. Yeah.
That would be like, what was the episode in Game of Thrones season?
Light of the Seven.
So it was very much like that episode of Game of Thrones where, like, if you had just watched Cersei like standing at the window drinking her wine with that amazing music, by the way, not gonna discount that, but it would be like ending that season on that and not actually showing what happened next.
Yeah, I loved how a lot of they wove like the house specific music into that as well. Like, you heard the Reigns of Castamere when they were showing the Lannisters.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see how they build this into a franchise and sort of do their best to make sure you know who everyone is. And it's funny to see, I don't know, it's just kind of fun to see like which ways they do that with. Because the first time you met a Lannister, it was just they were just a dit and brought a lion for no discernible purpose except to like be like, hi, look how important we are, which worked for me. But then now they've deepened it a little bit with Tyland, who is like at least trying to not be worthless.
I mean, he's helping the bad guy here, the usurper.
Well, he's doing his job. Tyland is doing his job.
No, I know what you're saying.
I think we need to get into our favorites roundup.
I liked the montage in the end.
Yeah.
And the music with the montage, I thought was cool. I like that, you know, the Starks finally showed up.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering when that was going to happen.
Yeah, that was cool. But I guess that's part of the montage. So I guess maybe I shouldn't use that one. Fuck, I don't know. I didn't like the episode. I didn't. I wish I can say I did, but I was just mad is what it was. I just felt like it was stringing me along, and the fact that absolutely nothing happened. Like, I liked that Allison showed up and like talked to Rhaenyra, and Rhaenyra got to throw it back in her face, you know, because now it's like on the other side. I thought that was cool, but...
What would you give the episode?
I'm not rating this episode. I'm not rating this episode. I'm going to rate the entire season. When we do our entire season, I'm going to do... Because look, in the end, this episode wasn't a bad episode. It's just that, why did you give us two less episodes this season and then drag everything out? Like, for that, you should have just gave us four episodes and made it nice and concentrated. That way it kind of keeps the hype going. And then we're like, ooh, now we're really in it. And then make me wait 2 years. Because now at this point...
Or no, not 2 years. Do the Netflix thing. Like, they released, what was it, 4 or 6 episodes of Cobra Kai? Yeah. And they're like, hey, you're getting the rest of them next year.
Exactly. Christ. Yeah, like if they had done something like that. Like, I understand that there's like budgeting and stuff, but I don't know why, as like Hollywood has strayed away from the typical 20 episode seasons where you can actually build characters and have things progress along.
Part of it is because everything's so expensive now, but
still, no, I know.
I do miss those days for sure.
And that's why I said it's like, aside from like the budget, like I get that, you know, but it's like, if you're going to make something 10 episodes long, don't make me wait 2 years for the next one.
I will say this about like the shorter seasons, not just budgeting, but also when you look back at actual like airing television, like when you had cable or whatever, and there were 16, if you're talking about like early Walking Dead, or like 20 plus episodes, if you're talking about sitcoms, there was a lot of fucking filler episodes. And I'm totally okay with the idea of doing away with that. But the problem with this is like a lot of this season felt like filler, which we'll get into in our hottest of the hot tea takes episode, which we'll hopefully record soon. But yeah, I agree that it could have been a shorter season with another shorter season coming sooner or something. I will say I did like the awkward family dinner. My enjoyment of that, like it was awkward, and it was so like hard to watch with Ulf like just bring me more birds, and Jace is like being a little dicky teenager, and Rhaenyra's like, you should comport yourself around, you know, the queen. And Hugh is like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And Adam of Hall kind of sticks up for himself when Ulf is like, oh, well, my dragon and I have no fear. Bitch, you didn't even want to ride a dragon like 2 weeks ago. So I don't know what you're going on about, but my feelings about this dinner were made even, I feel that it's even more hilarious knowing after watching the houses that Dragon built that the actor who plays Ulf claims he ate 30 quails in a day.
Jesus.
While they filmed that scene. Watch the houses the dragons built. Even the director is like, I think it was the director, she was like, I don't know, how did he not feel sick? I don't know what's happening here. But I thought that scene was, it was awkward, but in like the amusing good ways.
Well, the way we don't usually get like those universes meeting as much as they have in this show. I like how they've been finding new, just what I was looking at with this series and how they're going to differentiate themselves from Thrones in ways that that they can kind of just do laterally by exploring different areas of the world. It's been fun to see Harrenhal. It's been nice to give the Starks a break. It's been nice to kind of really get into the lifestyle of the poor and small folk and get some real, as much as sometimes that's felt a little clunky and a little bit simplistic. I like that they're doing that. And I think I like the subplot.
I also think that they're really good at inserting humor. That's one thing I will say about this entire season is they've been really good about inserting humor. Rhaenys like just giving side eye. Rhaenyra's comebacks to Allison in this episode. Fucking Ulf just like eating his quails apparently in
the
this
worst. Episode.
Lohar's on entire purpose, vibe misnomering of
entire
Thailand.
Vibe.
Yeah,
I have to wonder. I do like that this show, in a little less of a pointed way than they did last season, is being a little bit more intentionally progressive than the first series was. And part of me is like, I think of like poor Sansa and her wedding and how mad people were. And so every time when Lothar showed up, I was like, oh, you guys are trying really hard. Look at you breaking down gender norms. And it's good. Like she's really interesting. I have two thumbs way up.
Patrick, your favorite moments?
It was the prophecies, of course.
Obviously.
What else would it be? Look, maybe it was the White Claws, but I really did get emotional when Daemon went on his weirwood trip. It was probably a couple White Claws at that point. But yeah, I mean, I just did not expect to see this on my screen with this show. We saw White Walkers. We saw the comet blazing across the sky, which of course ties back to another prophecy about how the prince who is promised will be born under whatever it was, salt and smoke, and there was something to do with the comet. And then we see the dragon eggs, and then we see, of course, our queen, the mother of dragons, and her dragons around her. I thought it was so cool. I loved how it blended seamlessly into the next scene with Helaena as that common thread. And how she told Aemon, right? She done told him. Loved the cinematography, like I said earlier. That was easily my favorite part of the episode.
All right, Alex, what about you? Your favorite moments?
Honestly, my favorite moment, and has been, over, it's kind of been cumulative over the last season, it's just like the mutual Targaryen buy into anyone who hears this prophecy being like, oh yeah, this is right. This feels right. Daemon is like, oh yeah, absolutely, completely changes his mind alongside, like, with a little help from Alice Rivers, but like he's just like, oh wow, no, Song of Ice and Fire, we gotta do this shit, like, bam, on my knees, Rhaenyra, on my knees, love you. And then Alicent, she only has to hear it from Rhaenyra once. Rhaenyra doesn't have a book, she doesn't have like any proof, she just has like, no, there was this story that only the Targaryen kings know. It's just everybody is showing up to work with this thing, and I'm like, it kind of delights me that everybody's like, oh, as soon as they hear about it, they're like, oh, well, obviously this fairy tale is the priority.
Well, to be fair,
I am pleased with this.
If Rhaenyra tells me anything, and I think Yami is on board with this. If Rhaenyra tells me, yeah.
100%. I don't care what the prophecy is. You want me to kill a baby? I don't care. Just tell me to do it.
Okay, so Manny does not want to rate this episode on a scale of 1 to 10, Targa.
No, I'm going to rate it. I have to be like partial. See, my problem is that when you have a really good engine, but it's in a really stupid car, like Lamborghini, right? Lamborghini's got a great engine, but it's a really stupid car when you really look at it. It's really stupid. You know, like, it's just dumb. It doesn't really function as an actual car.
It doesn't go on modern roads. Like,
no, it doesn't. It's stupid. The only reason you buy one of those cars is to try to impress somebody else. You know, it's not for the $12,000 oil change you're going to have to get on it. So look, the episode was a good episode. It was a good buildup and stuff like that. The reason that I'm just a little bitter is just because nothing happened. And it was just like, so when we talk about like the montage being like a trailer for season 3, I felt like the entire fucking season was a trailer for season 3.
100%.
Because it was just like, it didn't go anywhere. And I just felt like they had these opportunities. And there was just things that kept happening. You know, Corlys talking to his kid, right? This thing keeps happening and it keeps happening. And it's like, guys, just do something with it. You know, like, shit or get off the pot, bro.
Exactly.
Daemon with Alice. I loved it. I was like, oh, that's great. But bro, every episode, and it's like, dude, just shit or get off the pot. Do something. I wouldn't even have minded if they went, you know, this kind of route and nothing happened, but they just gave us 4 episodes and they were just like, hey, it's going to be a little quickie. We're just going to do 4 episodes. And then next season, it'll be 10. We're just trying to kind of get through this middle part. I would have been okay with that. I wouldn't have been pissed. I'd have been like, yeah, totally fine. I just felt like they were trying to like pleasure me, but they just never finished. They were just like, okay, I'm done. I'm out of here. Bye. You know, and I just,
and now we're left with blue balls.
And now we're left with
cinematic blue balls. Exactly. Blue balls.
Exactly. And it's just like, man, and again, if the season was just a year away, because how long did we have to wait for like Battlestar, right? It was like a year. It wasn't bad. It was like,
well, and even early Game of Thrones, a year, yeah. Maybe I think a year and a half at most. Yeah.
And that was okay because that gave me time to kind of think about what I just watched, to rewatch it, maybe to study it a little bit. And then going into the next season, that's fine. But to make us wait 2 years, I don't have to go back and watch this season. The first season I did. First season, I was like, oh, I want to go back. I don't want to watch it. This one, I didn't feel like that. I'm just like, I just have to wait now. I don't know. I would give the episode, going past the fact that nothing really happened, just looking at it as just a normal episode, I'd probably give it like a 7 or an 8 because it did have good things that it tackled. It had interesting dynamics that are happening now, like with Aegon taking off with Littlefooter and, you know, or Alicent meeting up with like Rhaenyra and stuff like that. And then with the blockade and all this stuff. I thought it was like a good normal episode. Like, yeah, 7 or 8 easily. As a season closer, 0 out of 10.
Yeah, for all the same reasons, I would give it about a 7 as well. Maybe a 6.9. Yeah, there's really not much more to say. I agree with everything Manny said.
I was listening to my neighbors watch this upstairs, and before I think I was like halfway through it, but I would just hear him, and at some point I heard like, it's over. So this feeling is not like no one's alone.
Blue balls are ubiquitous.
Yes. When I was watching Game of Thrones towards the end, I was covering it for outlets and I was podcasting about it on my own. And so I was pretty dialed into sort of like any piece of news that would come out of like Winter is Coming or something, but I haven't been to this one. And so I just learned that it was going to be 8 episodes like last week. And I just learned about the seasons and it's like, okay, I see the steps you're taking and I understand it like broadly in terms of budget and in terms of kind of taking what they learned from last season and seeing what to do with it without breaking a budget in a pretty tight time. Or even, I don't even know if I can connect all that to budget, but like, I see that they're trying to make decisions in the realm of what is best for the show. I don't know. I think we will have to see the whole thing to whether or not they are collectively successful at the pacing that they're attempting, because at least they have a story with a closed end and they can game that out a little bit. But yeah, I'm with you guys. I was not dissatisfied in the season sort of progression overall, despite the fact that like, there's a lot of character development was lovely, but despite the fact that the action didn't necessarily move forward as much as we hoped. And it certainly, I prefer this pace to the pace of the first season, which was all, or it was just felt like way too much. But I, yeah, that last moment I was also like, wait, what? Now? We're not gonna get to see anybody on a turn. But yeah, overall I enjoyed it. I would give it 9.5 eyebrows because I'm a softie.
So I'm going to be harsher on it. I'm going to give it like 6.5 Tark eyebrows. I think if at the very least they had had Rhaena claim that dragon in this episode, I would have given it like a 7.5. But because they didn't, it's like a 6.5. And I'm not saying I didn't love a lot of things about this season. I mean, we have waxed on and on about all the things we've loved about the season, but I think the pacing was off. I think that, and we'll get into this more when we do our like whole season wrap up, but I think the pacing was off and I'm concerned about and we're going to have to wait 2 years because they did announce that they're going to start production for season 3 in early 2025. So going to have to wait a while for that. But yeah, 6.5 Targ eyebrows. I don't know. That's where I am right now. As we close out the episode, we just want to give a shout out to our heroes, to your patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. And thank you to Alex and Patrick for chatting with us. And of course, to our listeners for joining us for Hot D Takes. We will definitely be doing another hottest Hot D season summary episode, though not for a couple of weeks at least. So for the most current news and updates about the series, make sure to follow at A Geek Saga on Facebook, Instagram, and or Threads, TikTok, Twitter. But also consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast and Ice and Fire Con.